Flyers Daily with Jason Mertidis.
All righty, here we go. It is a brand new Flyers Daily for the 30th of January, 2025. Flyers Daily presented by Ticketmaster. Make more memories live. I was wondering when I was going to do that. But I wonder now if I've already done that and didn't realize it and catch myself. It is 2026. It is the 30th of January. And we are brought to you by Ticketmaster, Make More Memories Live, as I said. And the Flyers have gone down for a third straight regulation loss, this time in Boston against the Bruins by a final score of 6-3. And the Flyers struggle over the last dozen games since that win over the Anaheim Ducks at Xfinity Mobile Arena continue. I'll give you some of the numbers on that, on the last dozen for the Flyers in a moment, but let's go through the game last night first. Flyers outshot the Bruins in the game 36-27. Again, if I said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. Shots don't mean anything. The Bruins had the better scoring chances. The Bruins capitalized on better scoring chances, and they doubled up the Flyers in scoring. For Chris, who messages me, he's really concerned about the hitting numbers. Flyers outhit the Bruins by 20 hits, 35-15. Yeah, they had a tough lineup in there with DeLaurier and Hathaway, and they outhit the Bruins 35-15. But again, that number is more indicative of a team that has the puck less in today's NHL. I don't care about hitting. Now, it's been something that's been talked about on the podcast, and Doc DO9YF on the yesterday's comments from the show said, agree generally on hitting. However, pounding bodies and finishing checks on the forechecks creates a mindset. The other team members forces, errors, rushed puck movement, and turnovers that can be a result of finishing checks. Yes, the NHL is about skill mostly. However, you're over-minimizing physical play. No, I totally agree with that. Finishing checks and on the forecheck to play the body, especially when you play an aggressive 2-on-2, I totally agree with that part. Absolutely. And there's no debate about that. But the team that generally outhits the other team is the team that's chasing the team with the puck. That's the point of it. I don't want to over minimize it. You can be physical, especially if you're in the playoffs. I don't say when you get to the playoffs. I'll say if you're in the playoffs, the physical game is more and more important because of the attrition factor as well. Back to the game from last night. Victor Arvidsson scores the first goal to put the Bruins up 1-0 in the game. We didn't think Rasmus Ristolainen was going to play this game. Travis Konecny was actually a question too, according to the head coach, because he was limping around after the Columbus game. Not only one played, but both played in the game last night. I was stunned to see Risto out there after only playing two shifts last night and getting right back in there. It looked like, according to line rushes, that Emil Andre was going to play. And then when the game started, we saw it was Rasmus Ristolainen in what was some really jumbled up lines for the game. Flyers went with Dvorak centering Konecny and Kerbenkin, and I thought that line, even though the Flyers lost 6-3, I thought that line was good. I thought Nikita Kerbenkin played his best game in the NHL last night. Cates, Tippett, and Barkey were a line. Zegras was in the middle, playing center with Mishkov and Brink. Didn't think that line was particularly good. And that's not to be critical of that line. I think a line like that needs time together because they're creative players. If expecting a line like that to just click right away when Zegras hasn't played the middle with Mishkov and Brink, I think is a big ask right away. So I wasn't shocked by it. We'll see if Rick Tocchet goes back to it on Saturday against the Kings. And then Couturier centering the fourth line with DeLaurier and Hathaway. York and Sanheim were a pair, Sealer and Drysdale. And we thought Andre and Juleson was going to be it according to line rushes, but not. Risto was in there. And Sam Harrison got the start in the game. And as I said, Arvidsson scored the first goal. Then Pavel Zacha gets one through the five hole of Sam Harrison. Then Fraser Minton opens up the second period to give Boston the 3-0 lead before Travis Konecny at 3:16 of the second period. Boston just absolutely loses Konecny. And he is in front. And a lot of times when players are struggling to score, they could be that open and in that great of a scoring chance, and they just rush it and shoot it right into the goalie or shoot it wide. Konecny is not suffering from that right now. He is piping hot. He had the hat trick the night before, scored the only Flyer 3 goals. He scores the fourth goal in a row for the team and beats Jeremy Swayman, gets the Flyers on the board. It's 3-1 at that point. Then at 16-12, Casey Mittelstadt gets the goal to make it 4-1 after Ehrson made an unbelievable save. Then Mittelstadt is there to pick up the rebound and put it by Ehrson. Then Tanner Jeannot is able to beat Ehrson as well on a bit of a rush opportunity shot that I didn't like the way that Juulsen played it. I thought he gave Jeannot too much ice, but it ended up going through the five hole. And look, in goaltending terms, we always say the same thing. In the union, the goalie union, nothing threw me. Well, two got through Ehrson, the Zacha goal and the Jeannot goal. Then late in the period at 19:05, Grabenkin picked up his fourth of the season to make it 5-2. It looked like there was a goal earlier in the game where Grabenkin drove to the net, got a good scoring opportunity off. Dvorak followed it and put the rebound in, but Boston challenged it for goalie interference. And because Grabenkin's stick went into the crease and into the five hole of Jeremy Swayman, they determined that he couldn't play his position properly. I don't think had the stick gone there, he'd have made the save anyway, but I understood why that would be considered goalie interference. Goalie's not going to just let that stick out either. He's going to pinch, and he's already pinching everything tight to begin with on an in-low play because, again, nothing threw you. So you're squeezing your legs together and your pads together. So when that stick goes there, you're going to hold it, and you're pulling your elbows and everything in so that you don't have any holes. You don't have any loose spots under your arms or wherever. So I understood the call and think it was the right call as well. Head to the third period, Flyers down 5-2, pull the goaltender. Sam Ehrson doesn't start the third period. Let's rewind for a second. Why? Because late in the second period, there was a bit of a collision in front. I'm not really sure what happened, but he appeared to grab on his blocker side, like either the back of his leg, like his calf or hamstring or hip on his right side, and got up very slowly. The ref was checking on him, and then he didn't come out in the third period. Now, of all those injuries, what would be the worst one? The least one I would worry about would be the calf. It's also the one I think it's the least likely it is, and I'm not a doctor. The hamstring is something, obviously, that can nag, and the hip would be the worst one because the amount of stress on a goalie's hips with the way they play today is monumental, the amount of stress that goes through the hips. You think about being in the butterfly and your legs kind of out to the sides like that. It's not a normal position for your hips to have your legs out like that, or your knees. And every time you go down, I've actually read some sports science on this. Every time you go down into a butterfly, the amount that goes and of energy that goes from your knees up through your hips is four times your body weight. So it puts a ton of strain on a goalie's hips. So they're the hardest things to come back from. But I digress. Vladar starts the third period. They eventually pull him to try and get back in the game. Boston gets the empty net goal to make it 6-2. And then at 18:19 of the third period, Matvei Mishkov on the power play picks up his 13th of the season to make it 6-3. And the Flyers fall in Boston. Three games left before the Olympic break. To say they're limping to the break would be the understatement of the world. In their last dozen games, let me give you the numbers on this. Their last dozen games, the Flyers, since that Anaheim game on the 6th that they won 5-2 at Xfinity Mobile Arena, they are 2-8-2. So they have 6 standing points of a possible 24 standings points. That's hence the plummet in the standings. They have scored 31 goals in those 12 games, and they've allowed 55 goals. In a dozen games, they are minus 24 in goal differential. That's an alarming number. Again, 2-8-2 in the last dozen games, 31 goals for, 55 goals allowed. Now, Vladar was out for some of that, and doesn't matter. The thing that made this team successful earlier in the season was giving up well more than half a goal less per game and being a team that defended well with structure. They haven't done that. Backdoor goals. It's it's really like two different teams. Now, a lot of people will say, well, this is the team they were all along. They were just getting great goaltending. And I say, BS. They weren't. They were getting good goaltending, but also they were getting good goaltending as a product of having a good environment for their goaltender in Dan Vladar. But why? Well, some people's rebuttal will be, well, why weren't they having the same success with Erickson? Erickson was playing below his environment, and Vladar was outplaying his environment, hence the gap in the way it looked, the numbers, and everything else. But it wasn't just a product of Dan Vladar. He's a big part of it, but it was also good defensive zone coverage, good defensive zone environment. That is really broken down lately. And this isn't an indictment of the defenseman. This is an indictment of all the skaters. D-zone structure and D-zone coverage is five players. It's not just the defenseman. It's five players. And a lot of times that guy on the back door, that may be the center or the weak side winger's responsibility, depending on the situation, how it plays it out. I mean, you look at the first goal last night that was scored, and you look at, who was it, Arvidsson. He just moves into a good area of ice below Barkey, but not close enough to Cates, who is trying to check somebody else, and he gets himself into a prime scoring spot and is able to beat Erickson on that occasion. So the structure needs to be tightened up. Too many east-west plays, too many below the dot east-west plays on the back door, and those will start to mess with the goalie too. Again, I always say that bad goaltending will break down an environment, a good environment, and a bad environment will break down good goaltending eventually. And we're seeing that over this last 12 games where the Flyers are 2-8-2 and have just the six standings points, minus 24 in goal differential of a possible 24. I'm not a rocket scientist. It's pretty easy to see why the results have been what they have been of late, considering the numbers and the eye test. And when you see those breakdowns, now I think there are some guys that are playing well. I think Tippett is still playing well. I think Rebenkin has played well, earned the elevation to that line with Konechny and Dvorak. And I thought he really had a good game. Konechny obviously has been good. Guys like Sean Couturier are struggling mightily right now. And without Tyson Forster and a trigger, struggling mightily. It's one of the things I really liked about Grabenkin's game is he was on a two-on-one rush. I don't think they didn't score on the play, but on a two-on-one rush, he looked up. He said, man, it's a two-on-one. You'd like to make the pass for the one-time shot to get the goalie moving side to side, but it was a tough pass. So he said, you know what? I'm not even going to risk it. He just went hard to the net and created a very good scoring chance. That's a more simplified mindset. Because having a two-on-one rush and not even getting a shot on goal is worthless. So you figure you might as well at least go hard to the net if that risk of passing it doesn't meet the reward of it. And I think Rubenkin's starting to calculate those risk-reward things in his game, and I've been impressed with him. Now, when you compare this year to last year through 53 games last year, Flyers were 23-24-6. So, and they'd scored 154 goals. They'd given up 181 through 53 games this year. They're 24-20-9. They have 160 goals for this year compared to 154 last year. So six more goals. They've allowed 173 this year. Last year through 53 games, they allowed 181. So whereas earlier this season, it looked like the Flyers giving up a half a goal less per game was one of my big keys to this season. Right now, that is trending in the wrong direction and in a big way. So that has been a huge issue for this team. How do you fix it? It's tough. You got a condensed schedule. You're missing a key guy in Tyson Forster. Some teams are more built to handle injuries because of, you know, quality NHL depth that the Flyers don't have. So it's a tough spot. You just got to keep battling through it. They have three games before the break. And I mean, these three games are all at home, and you have LA playing at 9:30 on their body clock time on Saturday. Then you'll see the first matchup of the season between the Flyers and the Caps on Tuesday. Alex Ovechkin comes to town. Maybe the last, one of the last times we see Ovechkin invade Philadelphia. I think we'll be here another time or two this season. But and then Claude Giroux and the Ottawa Senators come to Philadelphia on Thursday, and then you got the 20-day break. But to say that they're limping into this break is an understatement. And I do find it very interesting that the 12 games and the struggles came right after that highly emotion-charged night at Xfinity Mobile Arena where the Flyers had that 5-2 win against the Ducks. And it just, you know what sucks about it? That there was a lot of eyeballs on that game. And that game, at that time, got the fan base excited again. And people started to jump in and jump on the bandwagon. I remember talking about it on the podcast, on social media, on the radio. And since then, it's been really rough. So the people that jumped on may have jumped off really quick. I get it. And you go, as soon as you start to have that hope or something, it all kind of falls apart. And like I said earlier in this show, like some people will say, well, this is who they were all season. They were giving up the first goal of the game, but getting away with it. And maybe to some degree that's true. But it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that this team earlier in the season played with a lot more structure and a lot tighter in the defensive zone. And they have to play from their crease out to be successful. They're not a team that can just trade chances with the likes of, I was going to say Colorado, they did in that third period, but the likes of the very highly skilled teams. They can't match that just yet. They don't have that. That's not the type of team they are. And I say they don't have that just yet. Do they even have that in the pipeline of that explosive skill? I don't know if Martone's going to be that guy. We got to see where Mishkov goes. But, I mean, these are legitimate questions right now. And, you know, kind of where do they go the remainder of this year? These three games before the break, and then we come back and from the Olympic break and you're getting close to the deadline, now you might be in a different headspace as a general manager. Now, I don't think Danny Briere and Keith Jones have changed their headspace and we're going, hey, they've ultimately said the players are going to determine the speed of this rebuild. And right now, the players and the way things have gone this season from being in a really good spot to really falling down here now are determining that. Water finds its level. I don't think as a manager, you change your overarching plan. I don't think you go crazy about it. Now some will say, well, he did. He extended Christian Dvorak. And I can't fully disagree with that. Dvorak signed a one-year deal. It would have been a good trade chip to try and get more equity in the 2026 or 27 draft. But right now, look, there's a lot of question marks right now when the team goes 2-8-2 over the last dozen, and it happens right after that Ducks game. That's the killer. One last thing regarding the hits about out-hitting the opponent. I went back and looked at two nights, Wednesday night and Tuesday night's box scores from all the games in the NHL. Any team that won a game by two goals or more got out-hit significantly, meaning the losing team out-hit the winning team. One-goal games, there was a couple where it was tighter, but 95% of the time, the team that lost the game out-hit the team that won the game. So we got to get out of that mindset. There's a comment on the YouTube channel from some guy saying, talking about in the 70s, the Flyers used to out-hit everybody, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, the game's evolved. It's a lot different now. That's not the way it is. You can't compare 70s hockey to the way the game is played now. So I don't want to even read the guy's comment. It's not apples to apples. It's more like apples to tennis rackets. All right, everybody, have a great weekend. Bill Meltzer will join us Monday. Hopefully the Flyers get a win on Saturday. Carnival on Sunday. If you're going to be at the carnival, I'll be there as well. I'll be walking around. If you see me, hello. Love to meet people face-to-face. But everybody, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next time on a brand new Flyers Daily.